And we bring you the Friday profile and the Friday mix today. And sitting across from me is someone that I have watched often with, always left impressed, always with the sense of, there's always optimism whenever Sello Hatang leaves a post or whenever he comments, there's a sense of purpose and optimism. And following him, you get a sense of someone living a purposeful life with a deep love and commitment and passion for South Africa. And this is where I'm hoping to walk away with an understanding of how this came about and how it became inculcated in you, Sello. Welcome, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much.
Well, a lot of people would know you from the work that you do with the Nelson Mandela Foundation. You're the CEO of the Nelson Mandela Center of Memory, a job that you've been doing for, what, 4 years now?
Yeah, it's one of those jobs that you wake up in the morning, Azania, and you think, I am lucky.
Yeah.
I am one of those people that has just been given this opportunity. It's a big opportunity. At the time that the board appointed me, I was 37. I just remember thinking, in fact, there were people who said, isn't he too young to do this kind of job?
It's a and you were job. Taking over from Ahmed Dango, who retired.
And Ahmed, who I respect hugely, Ahmed saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And I think that's something that we should try and inculcate in our people, to see something in others that they don't see in themselves.
Right.
And I every time I think of what Ahmed did in terms of grooming me, and the board finally appointing me,
yeah,
it leaves me with this sense of awe of what's possible with young people.
Oh, that's just wonderful. And it's something you can pay forward and walk or live it, live those kind of values as you move forward. And you stated your intentions quite clearly when you joined, when you took the helm as the CEO, about what you wanted to have come out of the Center of Memory. And it goes back, in fact, to the work that you did as an archivist. This process of having to leave behind and record accurately as possible, our history.
You know, the history can sometimes be used as something to whip people with.
Mm-hmm.
It can also be burdensome. It can be something that's so static that people don't appreciate. I was born in Kuma.
Mm-hmm.
In the northwest, and I was in standard 7 when the teacher of mine, history teacher of mine, Teacher Rema Jova, came to us and told us about opportunities which are just rare for black people, archives being one. And I thought, actually, I want to be that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be that. And I think we could, if we took history and took archives to young people, for people to appreciate. People who take that, reimagine history and use it as a tool of empowerment.
Right.
Not something that's oppressive,
mm-hmm.
That you need to live up to, but actually you can be.
Or avoid and not interact with. Because when you look at numbers that go to the Apartheid Museum, the likelihood is that it's more international travelers than local. With our contentious history, I think many of us do what we can to avoid these, to avoid museums, to avoid things that remind us of our past. But as you say, it doesn't have to be that way. So there you were, a young person who's been introduced to the idea of archival studies, but you're from Kuma in the northwest. You and your sister living with your grandmother, right?
Yeah. So I was born in a big family of six.
Yeah.
My mother lost 4 children. And now it's me and my sister. So I always say that whenever people use this thing of people working hard, I was walking with one of the climbers, Werner Kruner, who then asked me about myself. I said, you know, whenever I hear people talking about working hard, I think of my mother.
Yeah.
You know, my mother had this thing of leaving us around 5 a.m., 4 or 5 a.m., and then she would only see her late afternoon, sometimes late in the evening.
Mm.
If Mahowa Komsebetsing had something she had, because she was a domestic worker,
mm-hmm.
so if she had to cook and all that, then my grandmother took that thing of being the one who
Rakhotsekayena.
And in fact, I remember that I was saying to Verna, if there's someone who should have been rewarded hugely for hard work, it's my mother.
Yeah.
And I think it's true of all mothers, of all grandmothers. And the kind of work that I do at the moment is honoring women,
mm-hmm.
Empowering young girls, for them to be able to be as great, if not greater, than my mother.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
So the work that I try to do around women is more in honor of my mom. Mm.
That's wonderful to hear that the values and you watching her has left this kind of imprint on how you view the world, how you go through the world. So you were the first in your family to qualify for mm. university
mm.
and even complete and go on to do the things that you are doing.
You know, the last year I was saying that particularly for black people, it's a draw of the lottery
mm-hmm.
that you'll be successful, we should not rest. And I was that draw of the lottery. Out of 6 children, I'm the 5th. And all 4 didn't qualify. I did.
Mm-hmm.
In my township, there's very many successful people, but not as many as they should be. And I think for as long as for some in our country, if not for most, in fact, it's a draw of the lottery, we should not rest.
Yeah.
It should be normal for a black child to be an accountant. It should be normal for anyone to be whatever they want to be.
Mm.
It should be because you're capable and you're given an opportunity to be that. And I think that's something that I always say that, to young people when I get an opportunity to speak to young people, I say that all of us are capable. All we need is an opportunity.
Right.
Give me an opportunity and I'll be that which I want to be.
Mm.
And unfortunately, those come by hard. Opportunities don't just come. Mm. So we should eliminate the draw of the lottery.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Then life will be different.
Should fight for that kind of society.
Yeah.
So how did your family receive that? Because as much as it's something you want for your children that you covet, you know, this ambition, this hope that they will go on to university and their lives will be changed, will be a better version than yours. But this idea of going off to university can also fill families with a lot of dread that,
ooh,
what
yeah.
now? How are we going to do this? It's fantastic, but how are we going to do this?
You know, it's interesting because when I went, I got my results and I was one of the best performers at school. I came home. My grandmother had lost sight at the time, so she was blind. So you need to imagine this four-roomed house, these apartheid small houses. So she's lying on the floor on a blanket or a mattress. And I get home. My mom has just arrived. So I tell them that no, I got my results. I want to go to university. My mother stopped for like, I don't know what she was doing. I don't remember what she was. She stopped and she looked at me and said, "With what?" I said, with money. She said, "Yeah, with whose money?" I don't have that kind of money. Well, it's up to you, she said. And my grandmother, who was lying there, said it in Setswana. She said, "Falelela lehodi le monae." You know?
So
if he's crying for this hot coal.
Yeah, give it to them.
Give it to him. Let it burn him. And then she then turned to me and said, "We will support you. I will contribute. We'll support you." And we then went to church. The Catholic Church was the one that gave me the first break,
mm-hmm.
because they then gave me a bursary. And he said, okay, because in church that year I was one of the top performers, and we got paraded in front as top performers, and they asked each one of them, what are you going to do? Most of them had their careers clear, and I said, I don't know. So Father Gerard then said to me, well, let's see what the church can do. And they gave me my first break.
Mm.
My uncle, Opa Maboke, was another person who invested a lot in me and my grandmother. So I went to university basically with that kind of money. And I don't know if you know these calls that you make when you're at university. I need a book.
Yeah.
It's going to cost us $300. And my mother on the other side and saying, I don't have it. I haven't got it, you know. So I don't know how you're going to do it.
Mm.
But my grandmother's pension took me through that.
Mm.
So my grandmother's pension was the one that took me through some of this journey that I went through. And I think it's important that as we become great people in society, not that I'm there yet, as we become greater, we need to remember that many are not there yet.
Yes.
We need to create these stairs, these bridges for them to get there.
Mm.
'Cause for now, this pension money that paid for me, currently it's feeding, is still continuing to feed many families.
Mm.
So SASSA, whenever you think of SASSA, and it actually took me through university. And I think it's an important thing that we to remember.
Yeah. Wow, Silo. Yusuf on Twitter says, Silo is a true patriotic citizen. Keep up the good work. Because that's how you leave us feeling. There's always a sense that you're living this purposeful life. More with my Friday profile after the break. Silo Hadang, he is the CEO of the Nelson Mandela Center of Memory. I want to get his thoughts on some of the work that he did at the start of his career when he worked with the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. He was involved in providing archival support for what was being shared at the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. I think in 2015, there was much despair about what is happening with South African archives. And as an archivist, as someone who loves history, what are his thoughts? So more coming up after the break. We'll take your calls and your comments on 011-883-0702, 31702 for your SMSs. And we're back with Silo Hadang, the CEO of the Nelson Mandela Foundation. And we are exploring his life, getting to understand how he became this person with this deep love and commitment and passion for South Africa that we now see today. Siten Joa says, just switched on now, and your guest is touching on a subject close to my heart. Give a black child an opportunity. That is all. Let's go to Jeremy Mansfield on the line. Good afternoon, Jeremy.
Zania, good afternoon. Stello,
Molom Klegas.
Ninja. I haven't seen you in too long a time.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's one of the reasons I was phoning. But Zania, you can hear through this interview, I've known this man and done a fair amount of work with him through the Mandela Foundation over the years.
Mm.
He is one of the most humble, one of the most wonderful people that I have ever worked with in any charitable foundation. But he is also one of the most focused and driven people.
Mm.
And what he has done for the Mandela Foundation is he has taken it to another level of international input and international acceptance. In the day when Tata was still alive, it was easy to sell the Mandela Foundation because all you needed to do was bring Tata onto the stage and the whole audience would go mad. After his passing, that became the difficult part of the Mandela Foundation journey. And this man, as short as he is, has managed to steer that foundation from strength to strength. And I think every South African can take a leaf out of Silo Hadang's book and say, this is something I need to learn. Because if everyone in this country adopted the principles, the drive, the foresight of people like Silo Hadang, this country would be in a million times a better place than it is right now.
Silo, Jeremy.
Yabonga game, Kegas.
Thank you so much, Putuam.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Much loved radio voice as well. That's Jeremy Mansfield on the line saying hi to you. That's an incredible compliment.
Oh,
we see you. We see you. We see you. Yeah, they're also coming in on Twitter. So the value of archiving, because you did archival studies. You were at the Human Rights Commission, a senior manager there. And then you were also part of the transformation of the National Archives. And you provided archival support, as I was saying before the break, to the TRC. And there is so much importance in that. And it's a part of our history as it evolves, as we begin to understand more of ourselves and define who we are as a people, that we often neglect, even though it is critical to that understanding.
You know, let me first say thank you so much, Jeremy. When Azania said we see you, it's because I was not blushing, by the way. I became very tall. That's what happened. I think in terms of archives, if there's one thing that we must try to do as much as possible is to invest in archives. We don't invest enough in archives. We don't invest enough in ensuring that people know more about our history.
Speaks to access.
And access too.
Because it's so removed.
Yeah, it's an access too. And I think recent history of the Truth Commission, many people have forgotten that we went through that period. Mm. It's been used as a whip whenever you raise an issue, whether it be around racism or, and you are told, we went through the TRC, what do you want?
Mm.
So it's a whip instead of it being something about, we learned through the TRC and this is what we need to do to make for a greater country. Mm. And you said something about how patriotic I am about South Africa. Just yesterday, I posted the flag saying all of us have an obligation to fly the flag high.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you don't, there must be repercussions for you in terms of not flying our flag high. I went to Argentina recently and I was honored by the Argentinians with honorary something. And I remember how I went to speak to Argentinian children. And while speaking to them, they love our country, Azania. And and there was this is South Africa, the same South Africa that we complain about crime, we complain about racism. 50% or just more than 50% of the kids that I spoke to had been to South Africa or intending to come to South Africa.
Mm, mm.
Their families are coming this year or next. So we have an obligation. It's the only country we have. We must rid this country of all the social ills.
Yeah.
You cannot rest for as long as there's a woman who is battered. You cannot rest for as long as there's so much corruption in our country. You cannot rest for as long as all these things that are happening around the patriarchy continue. All of us must just say, no, 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 what's my responsibility? Because it's easy to say, what are you doing?
Mm.
What am I doing to help build a country of our dreams? And as Madiba said, he said that if there's one question that should bother all of us every morning when I wake up, what am I doing to help build a country of my dreams? Not of your dreams, but of my dreams.
Right.
And I know that country. I know how it looks like.
Mm.
It's a country that appreciates what it has, but says we can be better people.
Mm. Mm. So you were, I get the sense that you were on your way to becoming this kind of visionary before even working alongside Nelson Mandela and the foundation. This has somehow brought you even quicker as a young person into this way and this approach.
Mm.
So what was his effect on you? What is is there a favorite moment with this iconic man?
You know, the moment that I like reliving is not Madiba himself, but my son. So I got home one day and my son said, do you like, he was six, I think,
mm-hmm.
or four or five. He said, do you like working at the Nelson Mandela Foundation? I said, no, 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 I don't. I don't like working there. I actually love working there. And the reason is I get paid to do what many people would pay to just enjoy being in the company of Madiba.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I got paid for that. When people would have paid a million bucks just to be in his presence. And the thing that stands out for me is how there was a day when Madiba came to the office and I'm walking him in. And this happened quite often that you'd sit down and then I'll tell him, you're seeing so-and-so, with Zelda and so you're seeing so-and-so, this is what they need. And then Madiba, when someone walked in, this is a great Nelson Mandela, stand up from his thing and walk and meet that person.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would then shake their hands and introduce himself. You know, I'm Nelson Mandela.
Yes.
We take offense when you are not remembered. Yet he always remembered that he was actually just another one of us.
Mm.
And we can be Nelson Mandela's too. And that moment, from those moments, reminded me that all of us can be by just being good people.
What's your favorite quote? Because you've studied him, you've spent time with him, you've looked through his books, his letters. You've been quite intimate with objects and with, you know, with things that form part of who he is. You were also instrumental. You're part of the editorial team of Conversations with Myself. So is there a favorite quote or, yeah,
Sam,
a quote?
Sam and I, Sam Fenter, my colleague, and I co-edited a book on Madiba's quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, there's one that stands out. He says, if 27 years in prison taught me anything, is the value of words, that words can give life or kill. And I think most of the time we're violent with our words, we're violent with our actions, and I think if we just applied that a little bit more, we'd be better people. But the second and last thing is how there's a letter that I like quoting of Madiba talking about hope. And if there's one thing that Madiba can teach us through his writings, it was around hope.
Mm.
All of us can just have a touch of hope, even in situations where we actually don't have a reason to be. Because he was in prison, but he held on to hope that he'll be free one day. He was in prison, and we are not in that kind of prison. It could be that we're in another prison of poverty, prison of inequality, but we are not in prison. Let's free others from those kind of prisons.
And live with that kind of hope. Well, Sello, thank you so, so much for the trek, for raising funds for young girls to have access to sanitary pads, your second summit of Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
Very bold indeed. And you will continue to go back, as you've declared.
Yes, until 2020,
until 2020
at least.
And we'll continue to support you, no doubt about that.
Thank you.
This man took the time out to take pictures of plastic and litter and bottles to say, and saying, we must look after our environment. We must look after it. There he is in the middle of a climb, dealing with altitude, dealing with a group of 22 climbers, and he's still thinking about the litter problem. That's the kind of man that he is. Sello, much love, and thank you for
thank
your
you.
Time.
Thank you very much.
That is Sello Hatang, the CEO of the Nelson Mandela Foundation.